David. Welcome to Motherfuck Lore, the Irish War podcast brought to you by the Head Stuff Podcast Network. I'm Derek. I'm joined today by Cara Jean McAvoy, who's co-presenter with me.
Dave.
And our special guest today is Neil O'Rean.
Dave.
You might know Neil best as the man behind UntornBot on Twitter, one of my favourite automated Twitter accounts, which basically tweets the Untorn line by line. But as well as that, in his day job as a computer programmer and an Irish language enthusiast, has developed a computer coding language in Irish called Aravon. And we're going to be talking all these things today. Neil, you're very welcome to Motherfuck Lore.
Thanks very much for having me.
So tell us now, just to tell us a bit about yourself and your how you got your interest in Irish and computing, and did these things ever fight each other in your head when you were growing up?
So I suppose I've had an interest in Irish from a very young age. I'm from Carlo originally and went to there's a big Gaelic school and a big Gaelic college in Carlo, and I think a pretty strong Irish language scene there.
Excellent.
So I went to that Gaelic school and that Gaelic college, and when I moved up here to Trinity, was part of the Shkame Kona in the college. So I was lucky enough to be surrounded by lots of nice people and spoke lots of nice Irish.
Fantastic.
And during my time there, I also was, of course, studying. I did an undergrad degree in theoretical physics and then a PhD in astrophysics. So I did an awful lot of computer programming, and that was kind of my primary interest for a long time. I've since now moved out of the country, so I do a lot more computer programming and a lot less speaking Irish. So things like UntornBot and Aravon seemed like a fun hobby to have.
Fantastic. And you live in London now, is it?
I do, yeah. I'm located over there for the last 2 years now.
And there's a decent enough Irish community there these days. People, young people having to move over, unfortunately, but do they bump into each other much?
From time to time. I've run across a couple of Irish speakers over there, all right, but I can't say I'd be a particularly active member of the Irish community over there, unfortunately.
Well, hopefully you have a pop-up Gaelic there soon. So first of all, UntornBot is hugely popular for an account that doesn't interact with anybody or answer any questions. It's just fantastic. I love it. Do you want to tell us about how you started in that and why that one, and why do you think it's connected with so many people?
I'm, to be honest, surprised that so many people have enjoyed it as much as they have. I thought it was just a funny thing to do. But it's become so substantially more popular than I am on Twitter, for instance. It's got a pretty solid following there and gets an awful lot of interactions. So, I mean, the Ton is a wonderful thing, a wonderful piece of our heritage, a really beautiful story, and full of also just incredibly weird and somewhat cumbersome phrases that have been translated into English from Irish.
Thrice seven bondmates
crop up an awful lot in there. So it's just something that I've always really liked. I mean, from childhood, it's a wonderful story. And I came across the text of the translation from the 20s, which is now thankfully in the public domain, and decided this would be a funny thing to put up there. There are an awful lot of comparable bots out there, but very few for Irish specific things, I think.
It's really great. I love it. You should definitely introduce yourself as first the guy behind the Ton bot, secondly, because it's amazing. I love it. So Neil, if you wouldn't mind just giving, for some of us might not be like understand fully what Ton is or where it comes from, just maybe like Ton bot is like one of my favorite Twitter accounts. I love it. I was starstruck when we met this morning. But if you just give us maybe a background into like what Ton is and the significance of it and why you thought that particularly that one was the one to botify.
So Ton is a very old story, and I preface this by saying I'm not a historian. I'm a fan of the Ton as a fan rather than as a person who's got deep academic knowledge about it. But yeah, it's a very old, I guess, druidic story that probably goes back to God knows. I mean, as a written work, I think it goes back to like 700 AD, and it's probably around in the tradition for a long time before that. And it kind of takes a story about a woman who wants to steal a bull and the men who want to stop her. And the various foibles and kind of mythical things they come across along the way. And the reason that I mean, it's obviously a hugely influential thing in Irish culture. Cú Chulainn is one of the, you know, big archetype heroes in Irish culture. Maeve is very well known. Cú Chulainn is on the GPO out there. The end of the Ton finishes, spoilers, with Cú Chulainn being killed in a particularly grisly way. And it's commemorated in the big statue outside the GPO. There's a Horse Lips album named The Ton. You know, it's a thing that that's had a big influence on Irish culture, and a thing that I really like. And there's something really cool and I think kind of fun about the idea of taking a thing that has a long literary tradition and then a long oral tradition before that, reaching back into druidic, you know, prehistory, and putting it on Twitter next to tweets about the news and about celebrity culture. I think there's something really nice about that, about keeping it alive through a new a new medium and giving people a new way of interacting with it. And it does make for some really lovely quote tweets then as well, because it's super weird.
Yeah, that's true. And I think maybe one of the key identifiers of how significant it is in Irish culture is how popular it is on Twitter. I mean, people who don't know or maybe have never read The Thon just know vaguely what it's about, but follow it on Twitter and love it. It's so amenable to Twitter. It just fits so well with a modern tool that we have.
Yeah, it's very strange that it does. I really didn't expect that to be the case. Again, this is just like a thing I put together over a weekend as a little hobby project. And it's, far more popular than I am on Twitter. It seems people really, really, it's like Frankenstein's monster, but Frankenstein made the monster and people decided they liked the monster more than Frankenstein. Yeah.
I'm just thinking about it. The Thon would be an amazing Netflix show. I would watch that.
It would make for some.
If Netflix are listening, guys, pick it up.
It would make for excellent television. It's very Game of Thrones in parts.
Yeah,
all right.
A little bit, right?
One of the things I think that people really love about Anton Bot is it's ideal for quote tweeting.
It certainly is. Now, it comes up with some really catchy little phrases. Cuchulainn got up for some weird, weird things.
It's so funny because it's Cuchulainn, I mean, we have this image, I suppose, of just this ancient action hero, but then also he's like, he has often very strange opinions and things. He's got his odd mates. Leigh, his buddy, druid buddy Leigh, is just such a condescending know-it-all. And then obviously, and Cuchulainn's always looking for somewhere to, to put a spear, and I think that's one of my favorite just quotes out of context is when Cuchulainn, maddened by thirst, begged her for a milking. He's talking to just a milkmaid who's milking a cow.
But sure he is. Yeah, sure.
Maddened by thirst.
And of course, Maeve is a marvelous character. She's
Maeve doesn't
pull her punches.
She would be such a welcome presence in Ireland now if she came back. I think she knows exactly what she wants and she isn't worried about what anyone thinks of her.
Yeah, no, she's a marvelous literary archetype, isn't she? And the Morrigan then as well, which is just as weird as they come in historical fiction, I think, is a very unusual thing. What is the Morrigan?
Yeah, that's the thing. You even getting an exact answer why it is, and there's so many different interpretations. So the actual text you use isn't the Kinsella translation. It's an earlier one.
It's not. It's an earlier translation. The name of the translator eludes me at the moment. I should know that. But it's one from the 20s, which is now thankfully out there in the public domain. I think the Kinsella one is probably a little bit better. It's the one I'm more familiar with. It's the one I've actually read myself. But it's still under copyright, so I decided to err on the side of caution there.
I think you're probably right. Because Kieran Carson did a translation as well, but I think it was I think he tried to translate into a Northern Irish dialect of English, and it works in parts, but not so much in others.
Yeah, it's a difficult thing to translate. I think there are passages of it that are just kind of weird, that are just listing unusual things and are difficult to find poetry.
I was looking over here at some of the most popular or most well responded to Anton Bot tweets. And one of the top ones is, just when it's taken out of context, any context is great. It happened. He knew by the man's speech that he was a fool.
Ooh.
So this one is obviously just after a football game. And it's just shame and reproach to Ulster. I think it's wonderful when they're just taken out of context. They can be wonderful. And they are in a bog as a witness ever since.
Wow.
Sounds pretty ominous.
Yeah.
Till their dead be more in number than their living.
Wow.
That's very good.
That's a really good, that's a creepy one.
The Thon is dark AF. I'm telling you, this is Netflix gold.
For, and I go not, the troth of men will be held for false and their promises of women held for true.
I don't even know what that means.
What does that mean?
It means
I like it, though.
Men are Egypts and women are going to rule the world.
Oh, if only.
He heard something, a rushing at din and a hurtling sound, a noise of thunder, tumult and turmoil. But I think these, any of the ones that involve Cuchulainn actually killing your man's dog, killing Cullen's dog with a hurley, will tend to be very popular, the small ones. And he was a big-nosed, large-eared, apple-eyed, red-limbed, great-bellied, thick-lipped man.
That's very nice. One of the nice things about it, I think, I don't know if it's particular to this translation. I've read the Kinsella one, but not this one. And I don't remember it being so prominent in the Kinsella one. But I think translating it from Irish to English lends itself to making really weird compound words that are totally not something you think of if you're using the English language.
Especially so. And I think that especially when you're translating from Old Irish rather than Modern Irish, you actually did have what they call kennings. Where they say, you find this in Beowulf, where they refer to the river as the Swan Road and the sea as the Whale Road.
Wow. Oh, that's beautiful.
That's really nice.
It's really beautiful.
Swan Road, I like that.
And I think, yeah, there's a few of those in, there's a few of those kennings in Old Irish as well. They refer to the sea as the fisherman's garden.
Oh, that's so sweet.
That's very nice.
Beautiful, isn't it? So yeah, it's Old Irish is great. We're going to have hopefully one or two episodes just, you know, on greatest hits of Old Irish.
The top 40.
Thereafter, Cú Chulainn went his way to his tryst with the women.
Cú Chulainn was
he did that a lot.
He's a pup.
Yeah, he was absolute pup.
Yeah. I think the word we'd use to describe him nowadays is fuckboy.
We've been working on coming up with a suitable Irish word for fuckboy. Are we going to use an existing term, or are we going to find compounds of buckle fuckle or something like that?
But this is now my life's mission to translate fuckboy.
Absolutely. I can't wait until a day that Termadoli announced that they have this new one going up. And now, so I'm going to ask to talk a little bit about coding sometimes, and I guess computer languages in general, because obviously you have this interest in Irish and you also have an interest in the various computer languages. A lot of people sometimes, when they're talking in an odd moment about Irish education, they talk about coding. And I often remind of the scene in The Graduate when someone walks up to Dustin Hoffman and says, plastics, as career advice. Now, a lot of people talk about coding, don't know what they're talking about, particularly politicians in education. Can you just give us a general idea of what computer languages are and what coders actually do all day?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, computer programming languages are a way for you to, I guess, formalize your thoughts in a way that can be communicated with a machine that is extremely and unflinchingly literal. It will just do exactly what you tell it, and mm-hmm. that's all it knows how to do. So in order to get it to do something useful, you need to be able to say what you want to do in an explicit formalism. So programming languages provide you a way of doing that.
Isn't there a part of ironic punishment in there sometimes that you actually think, well, I assumed you understood what I meant by this?
Yeah, we've built this beautiful, complicated machine, and now we have to bend ourselves to its will to make ourselves understood by it. A little bit, yeah. And we have to do things that I think are, like, programming is so weird and abstract and gets so complex, and you're dealing with a big code base that it's almost at the limit of what the mind is able to take in all at once. Mm-hmm. So we kind of, you know, force ourselves to play this weird game with this machine that's a lot better at it than we are and punishes our every mistake. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there are a huge number of programming languages out there. There are, I guess, probably 8 to 10,000 of them.
Okay.
A very large number. And they all are at some theoretical level the same. There is a property called completeness that programming languages have if they meet a set of fairly basic criteria.
Mm-hmm.
Basic, but practically not possible. But if they meet these criteria, they are all the same after that. Any problem that can be solved with a computer can be solved in that language.
Okay.
So there are very many. They're all technically the same, but they're all useful for different things. So some of the very popular languages now are, you know, things like, I guess, Python, probably the most popular, most commonly used language for lots of applications. Things like C are very old and go back to the mid-60s and have a long history and kind of support an awful lot of the architecture that modern computers are built on. And they just all have different strengths and weaknesses. Some are quicker than others for certain types of jobs. Some are more flexible than others for other kinds of applications.
Okay. And I did a two-day course in HTML a couple of years back. So, you know, I'm a bit of an expert in this. Not really. But one thing I discovered, I suppose, when I was learning HTML was that if you went into a French website like Le Monde or a German one like Der Spiegel and you actually went up and looked at the actual code, if you went up into the menu and you looked at the actual HTML behind the actual website, and it was all written in English, even if the website was French or German.
Yes.
Like, so the words kind of head, body, HTML, these things, green, would come up. And you know.
Yeah, so as I said, you have this kind of explicit formalism, and it was sort of decided because in the mid-20th century, science became a monadlot endeavor that was done primarily in, you know, Western countries, and the American Empire is steadfastly English-speaking, so English became the language that programming languages were written in, even though the vast majority of scientific work and even the vast majority of programming languages are developed in place where English is a second language.
Mm-hmm.
The language I mentioned earlier, Python, was developed in the Netherlands.
Oh.
Ruby is a very popular language, developed in Japan. Yeah, an awful lot of this work is done in places where English is a lingua franca and not actually their first language. But yeah, the form was kind of decided at some point, or happened by chance, I guess, that the formalism that we express ourselves in, the primitives that we use in programming are all based around the English language.
Hmm.
Some of the very common ones would be, I mean, almost all languages will have some form of a for loop. You just say for, a while loop, do this while this is the case, and that keyword is literally in there. If you wanted to introduce some kind of logic into the system, you'd say, if this is the case, then do this, else do that. And all those words that I carefully stressed there will be in the language literally in English. And as I said, that's as a result of the kind of dominance of English as the scientific, the global scientific language now.
And just on that, I was just wondering, maybe it's beyond your scope, is that kind of maybe, do you think, like holding back other countries that potentially English isn't as common in a lingua franca, that maybe there is potential there? Or is there a move maybe away from English being this dominant global?
It's a very, very interesting question, and one that I'm only in, you know, only qualified to speak about as a as an interested amateur. I'm not a historian or a philosopher of science, but yeah, I think we're in a unique historical moment now in that English is completely dominant. It's 90-odd% of papers are printed in English, scientific journal articles. The 50 biggest scientific journals in the world are all English language journals. And that's very unusual up until we're in the first generation of scientists who've been raised in that regime, really. Up until before the Second World War, German was, if not the the dominant language, at least comparable with English. A lot of the early work in quantum mechanics was done in the German language by Einstein and Max Planck and Niels Bohr. So before that, we had also French, which had been the language of chemistry, and you know, Linnaeus wrote a lot of his work in French and stuff like that. So it's an unusual time that we're in now, and it's as a result, as I said, of the kind of steadfastly English-speaking nature of America.
This stumbles upon one of the things that one of my favorite piece of science fiction writing ever is. It's by a guy called Poul Anderson. It's called Unclefdish Beholding. I'm not sure if you've heard of this, but basically, he took basic atomic theory, first year chemistry about atoms and stuff, and he wrote it in a version of English as if no Latin or Greek words ever entered the English language.
Wow.
As if basically it was written but using Anglo-Saxon terms. So the phrase an uncleft is something that can't be cut, it's an atom. And beholding is actually a word for theory, and he took it based on, he took the word theory from its Greek and roots as coming to the theater, a place where people go to understand things together, where things are beheld. And he looked at the words for each element, like hydrogen, oxygen, you can name them as they would be if using Anglo-Saxon tropes, like sour stuff for oxygen, water stuff for hydrogen, fire stuff as one. Then the coal stuff for carbon was one of the ones. And when you're just reading it, and Ymir stuff was what it had for uranium, because he found the equivalent god in Norse to Uranus. And what really got me is that sometimes when people translate Irish scientific terms into Irish, they look so similar to the English word, and it almost makes the Irish scientific terminology look very contrived. But the English one is contrived too; it comes from Latin.
Yeah, no, that is the case. I think as the only other time that we had kind of a comparable global language of science was when it was Latin, but that was shared by a bunch of people who were using it as a second language. Newton spoke, I guess, English in his day to day life, something we would recognize as English, but he wrote all his work, or the vast majority of it, in Latin, as did the guys in the Arabian Peninsula when they were doing their tremendous work in algebra. They were using this foreign lingua franca to express, because it was considered a neutral language for exchange.
We're looking at, I suppose, the monoglot phenomenon in coding and science in general now, but you've taken a stand against this with Aravon. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, bucked the trend there with Aravon. So as far as I know, there aren't any other programming languages out there in Irish. There are a couple in other major European languages, not ones that are really commonly used, but things were developed in the 70s and 80s. Funnily enough, when I put together Aravon, I realized that there was another non-English programming language out there already called Fuckle.
No way.
By total coincidence. It's an English language abbreviation for something that ends with, I think, algebraic language. I can't remember.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
But it's already gone. F-O-C-A-L is already taken as a programming language name. And it was, I think, it was developed in English and then translated into maybe German and French back in the kind of spirit of European cooperation when that was still a thing we had. And there are a couple of other languages out there that we see similarly that are kind of developed in French or in German, but they're primarily as like teaching tools. I know one, for instance, there's C, as in Spanish for yes, which is a version of the language C the capital letter T.
Oh.
In Spanish, which I think is used as a teaching tool there. But primarily that's what their application is, not really as a as actual languages that people would work with daily. We're back to, again, English just being the language that it's done in.
So, and so tell me now, in terms of if I was going to use Aravon now, what could I use it for?
So it is, I think, as the name suggests, Aravon is Irish for calculator, and it is pretty much just a calculator. It has that property of completeness, but it isn't a language that provides any kind of graphical output or anything like that. It's a language you can do calculation in. So it's based on some older languages like Scheme and Lisp, which for any technical people out there, I think, will realize what the limitations of the language would be. They're pretty much the same as the ones that Scheme and Lisp would have. But they provide functionality for doing any kind of arbitrary calculation you might want to do.
Fantastic. And but there and you'd see that there would be a potential in future to have other Irish-based coding languages which could be used for graphics or things like that. Or...
Yeah, I mean, I've always thought that we don't need to... I mean, what I did there was kind of just a fun thing to do, a hobbyist activity, really, to put this thing together. But there is scope to build things that will interface with already existing programming languages, but provide native language functionality. So having kind of what would be called a developer environment, you know, a piece of software that you run that allows you to write code and that allows you to do it in a way that sort of hides the English language part, obfuscates all of that, and gives you a natural language or a native language interface to work with.
There must be huge security advantages to having some of the code of a website written in a minority language.
Yeah, exactly. No one's going to be able to hack into your website.
Exactly.
Yeah. Nice way to obfuscate what you're trying to do, all right.
What do you think of the actual Irish language websites as a coder? What's your opinion of things like Terma.ie, Tangle.ie, Fuckler.ie, in terms of how they're constructed or accessible they are?
Oh, they're, and I think, absolutely amazing resource. And it boggles my mind the amount of work that goes into Irish language translation, and making that stuff accessible and amenable to people is wonderful. So, I mean, in particular, I always really enjoy going to Terma with a somewhat obscure, maybe technical term, and finding that someone else has had that thought already and has put it into the Irish language. To give you one example that came about when I was putting Aravon together, it supports a really, I think, kind of weird property called tail recursion that you could go half your life in writing code and not come across. And I said, what would I call tail recursion? How will I refer to this in the language? And I stuck it into Terma, and it's on there, and it's acursal era, as in an arable, as in a tail, and as in recycling, because recycling is kind of like recursion, I guess.
That's pretty sweet.
So I think it's a really nice phrase, and it's nice that someone else has already thought about that out there. There's, you know, I have a friend out there somewhere that I just haven't met yet.
So, and one thing I find that compared to, say, other government websites, like when I'm on Changlin.ie, Terma.ie, the actual things are linked really well to each other. If you compare it to, say, sites looking for like things like planning applications or various entitlements a person might have, that it's actually very hard sometimes to find that information, and sometimes you're almost better searching in Google to actually get to the part of the website rather than within the website itself. It's so nicely streamlined, and it's linked to sound files really well.
Yeah, no, that's true. It's a really wonderful resource, and it's a huge amount of work going in there by those guys. They're doing some really great stuff.
And so when I was actually learning HTML those years ago, and obviously in HTML you have tags, and where basically there's pairs of terms, and one was the beginning terms, head or body, and the second one is backslash head or body. I used to refer to those backslashes as shavus, because I kept on thinking the second term was the tishtilgenadach of the first one.
That's a nice application of like the way that a minority language changes the way you think about these things, that we maybe are stuck in patterns of thought around the English language being the one that we use to do this in. That there's certainly funny little ways that you can think about it by putting that native spin on it.
Neil, Oreen, thank you so much for coming on. We can follow you on Twitter on...
I'm Neil_O_R.
Great stuff. And more famously known as?
AntonBot.
And if somebody wants to use Aravon, where can they find it?
It's on GitHub. For any technical people out there, you'll find it on my GitHub repository, which is also Neil_O_R. And if you feel like forking it and having a go at making it a little bit better, it'd be more than welcome. I'm giving a talk about it next month at PyCon here in Dublin for anyone who's technically minded and keen to come along.
Excellent. What date is that?
It is the 22nd of October.
Fantastic. Neil, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
So it's a slán from me.
A slán from me.
And a slán from me.
See you next time. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. please do like and subscribe and rate it on iTunes or wherever you do get your podcasts so that we can continue to bring it to more people. If you enjoy this podcast, you might find there are other podcasts on the Headstuff Podcast Network. May I recommend, for example, Dubland the Podcast or Bookish and many others. If you'd like to support the continued work of Headstuff, please do consider supporting Headstuff on Patreon. We look forward to seeing you next time. Thanks again to Brian for producing the show and Kirsten Scheel for doing the podcast artwork. Slán.
This has been a production of the Headstuff Podcast Network.
When I say basically, if you want to support Mother Folklore and Headstuff in general, you can go to Patreon. It's just somebody say it and I can try and copy what they say.